Hello, everyone, and welcome to the RotoExperts Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. I'm joined by my old buddy, Matt Friedman. You can find him at Matt F. The Oracle on Twitter. Matt, do you ever wish that you could change your Twitter name?
I think about it not every day, but I think about it a significant amount. But I don't want to have a Roto Reeves type of situation.
Oh, no, no. The Roto Reeves era will live in infamy.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know what I would switch it to. Would I switch it to something like Friedman Football or Friedman NFL? I don't know. Like, I can't switch it.
It'd be Friedman Tan.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I kind of want to be thoughtful about how I do it. I don't know. The Oracle thing is just something that's kind of stuck. And so I feel like I'm a little bit stuck with it. But I can't go to Matt Friedman or Matthew Friedman or Friedman Matt because all of those are taken.
All of them are taken. See, I feel as if there are many things I've done wrong in my fantasy football career, many things I've done right. But one of the first things I did that no one had the foresight to do, making DraftKings and FanDuel names 8 years ago, everyone made their screen names really dumb things. Like just, you know, just all like the, like just random names. And that's not very good branding because either people aren't going to know who you are or they're not going to attach it to your Twitter profile. So I've just everything in fantasy sports, I've just made my name.
Yeah. You were a visionary in that regard. The one thing I will say is that even in 2012 or whenever it was that I first got on Twitter, like Matt Friedman was taken at that time. Like I tried
to. Wow, that's running back.
But yeah, so it was. I was already, behind the eight ball on that one.
Yeah. So. Anyways, the reason why I wanted to have you on the show. Well, I mean, other than that, I just like to talk about football with you. Is I listened to the podcast that you do on Mondays on RotoViz, and you had Manchin on the show, and you guys were having this conversation about Juju Smith-Schuster versus DeAndre Hopkins as the number one overall wide receiver in fantasy football. And, basically I'm having you on, Matt, for confirmation bias, because I too have Juju Smith-Schuster as the number one wide receiver in fantasy football. In PPR leagues, it's not particularly close in terms of how he's projected. So before I talk about how I'm projecting Smith-Schuster, I want you to talk about your Smith-Schuster projection.
Yeah, it is embarrassingly aggressive. I'll just say that I know I'm being aggressive. And so there are lots of things that go into it. And part of this is like a conversation of the difference between projections and rankings. Mm-hmm. So for rankings, I would totally understand why someone would have DeAndre Hopkins or Davante Adams ahead of Juju. You could name a few other guys to where it's reasonable to have them ranked ahead of Juju. But in terms of projections, I have Juju with my highest overall projection. And I'll just say it's really aggressive. And it's aggressive for three, I think, main reasons. One, I think that what we saw last year out of the Steelers' total offense, their pass-heavy quality is something that will continue. I still think that they will regress. So last year they had 689 pass attempts. As a team, I think that's going to be closer to the like 640-ish range.
But so I'm off that number. That's still a lot. I'm off that number. I'm off that number by a lot, and I still have Smith-Schuster projected number one, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, but I think they were a team that tended to be pass heavy in general. Mm-hmm. But with the elevation of Randy Fichtner last year from quarterback coach to offensive coordinator, like they really took another step in the pass heavy direction, and that's like an intentional thing. That is something that like Roethlisberger likes, having more control of the offense. If the quarterback has more control of the offense, they're going to skew a little more towards the pass. And under Fichtner, as opposed to Todd Haley, like Fichtner was fine with Roethlisberger having more say over the offense. So I think they will continue to be a relatively pass-heavy team. So that's one thing in this. The other thing is that I think Juju will see market share that is approaching what Antonio Brown saw last year. So
yeah, I have him for 28% market share of the Pittsburgh team target.
And that was the lowest mark that Antonio Brown had in 6 years of dominance. I have Juju closer to 30, I'll just say. And like that's maybe aggressive, but
I don't think so, because I think
what Antonio Brown was doing. I'm not going to put Juju at the lowest mark Antonio Brown was hitting. I'm going to put him closer to the middle range of what Antonio Brown was hitting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think everything the Steelers have done this preseason has shown, like, this passing offense, we're not making Dante Moncrief a superstar. James Washington has played well in the preseason, but he's also been playing with, like, this is not even a joke, this is not an exaggeration. James Washington at times has been playing with the fourth team offense in the preseason. So I just don't think it's a situation where, if you go back and historically look at these Tomlin-Roethlisberger combinations, in some of the years, there was a pretty clear top two. And then in some of the years, it was one dude and then six other dudes. And I think this year for Pittsburgh is looking more like one dude and a bunch of guys rotating.
Yeah, like it's possible that James Washington or Dante Moncrief or Vance McDonald will really emerge as a strong second option.
But Vance McDonald already hurt.
Yeah, but I think it's basically just some kind of like homogenous mass of receiving production after Juju. So I think he's going to be the clear number one on that team. A 30% target share is aggressive, but considering what Antonio Brown got in his six seasons there, I really don't think it's that aggressive. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is like the quality of targets. And I think Juju is going to have a great quality of targets in two ways. One, I think he's going to continue to see a lot of action in the slot. So on a per target basis, I think he's going to be efficient at turning his targets into receptions. And I think he's still going to be pretty efficient at turning his receptions into yards, because James Washington and Dante Moncrief on the outside, like those are guys, like they're not Antonio Brown, but they still have to be respected in terms of like their deep ability. So even though there will be like more quote unquote defensive attention given on Juju, I still think he's going to be pretty good at turning his receptions into yards. And then like going along with the quality of receptions or quality of targets, he's going to be targeted much more in the end zone. So all of those targets that last year, the league,
I mean, the
targets,
whole team existed to give Antonio Brown touchdowns last year.
Yeah. So all of those end zone targets that went to Antonio Brown last year, a chunk of those have to go to Juju this year, just kind of like in the natural flow of the game. So I think he's going to see a slight boost in targets, but even if you just pencil him in for the exact number of targets he had last year, in quality of targets, I think he's going to see an improvement. So I have him aggressively above all of the other wide receivers. I know I'm being aggressive in that, but like, I think it's aggressive within like the realm of reality.
I just think it's so reasonable, right? Like, I just think if you, the only real argument that you can generate against why Smith-Schuster would project better than everyone else basically comes down to, these arguments that, you know, real football people make, right? Where they say, oh, well, he can't, you know, he's not going to be able to handle wide receiver, like cornerback, like top cornerbacks, you know, which is just like, you know, that sentiment is not reflected in any data set I have ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, man. And so two things on this. One, like, if he's playing in the slot, it's not as if a lot of teams are going to be moving their top cornerback on him anyway. Like cornerbacks,
cornerbacks play in the slot, like that they're good at it.
Yeah. So like most teams have like their guys in terms of where they play. It's like this guy is more of an outside corner. This guy's more of a slot corner. They're not going to move their top corner who normally plays outside into the slot. Like that's going to be a relatively rare thing. But then like also, how do we know that Juju can't beat a number one corner if he plays outside? Like this is a guy who at this point in his career has outperformed basically any other player to this point in his career when we're adjusting for age.
There's only one guy who has better age adjusted numbers than Smith-Schuster.
I'm assuming that's Randy Moss.
It is Randy Moss. Yeah. So Randy Moss average is the only guy who by the age of 21 had more yards and more touchdowns, but they had like the same yards per reception.
Exactly. So we are talking essentially about Moss light, like not in terms of like their skill set, they're different types of guys, but in terms of like their production, like imagine Randy Moss entering his third year and having the temerity to be like, nah, I'm not going to think of that guy as a top three wide receiver. Like, that's the situation with Juju. This guy has been as good as any other NFL player in his first two seasons. and we're not thinking that he's going to become like an incredible monster when he's entering his third year and the guy who was getting a whole bunch of targets is now not on the team.
Yeah, like the weird ones to me are people who are insistent that Davante Adams should project better, because we don't think the Packers probably are going to be like a significantly better offense than the Steelers. You know, I guess the difference is like people who are probably arguing that Smith-Schuster can't handle top cornerback coverage are the same type of people who are going to say, well, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback and ignore all evidence to the contrary. So I guess that makes sense. And then also, you know, Julio, he's now 30, right? You know, like, and Michael Thomas is really interesting, because I think everyone appreciates that he just had this like absolutely amazing season in fantasy. And then I think exactly 0% of people expect him to repeat that.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about Green Bay? Because I think the enthusiasm around Davante Adams is hinged to like three things. One is this idea that Aaron Rodgers was injured last year. He's been injured in some of his previous seasons, and he's going to rebound to the quarterback that he was basically 5 years ago. Or people think that deep down that is still the guy that he is. I don't know if that's an assumption we can make. Two, people are thinking that Matt LaFleur, for some reason, is going to be very much like Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan. And I don't know if we can make that assumption. That's a hard assumption to make in general, but then also based on what we saw out of him in Tennessee last year as the offensive coordinator, I don't know if we can make that assumption. And then the third thing, people talk about Davante Adams' touchdown floor, and it is true that he does get peppered a lot by targets in the end zone or in the red zone by Aaron Rodgers, and that's something that will probably continue, but touchdowns are so finicky. Like, I don't know if we can just pencil in Davante Adams for 10 touchdowns each year.
Yeah, we could lock in the targets, but I don't think that we could. I don't feel comfortable locking in the touchdowns. Like, he could just run bad.
Yeah, exactly. He could run bad. Like, he could get 6 touchdowns this year, and that would be totally within like the range of reasonable outcomes. So, I mean, what? Like, I like Davante Adams. I think he's a top 5 receiver. But I wouldn't feel comfortable with him as the number one guy on my board.
Yeah. Another thing that you didn't mention is there's also the theory out there amongst the real football people that Aaron Rodgers was tanking the offense on purpose because he didn't like Mike McCarthy, that he was purposely not doing as good as he could do because he wanted McCarthy gone so bad.
Yeah, I don't believe that. I think most of the time,
I don't believe it either. But that's a theory I've heard.
Yeah, I think most of the time these guys are actually, you know, playing to try to do their best. But yeah,
an interesting take, Matt.
Yeah, it is an interesting take.
Okay, so I guess the one other point I want to make on top wide receivers is. So DeAndre Hopkins is an amazing player. He plays in an ascending offense. I think that there's some pretty decent size risk associated with him if Will Fuller and Keke Coutee both play healthy seasons. What is your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's right, because Will Fuller, the take that Manchin had that most infuriated me was the Will Fuller, and he was just trying to make this point in passing, but that Will Fuller and Dante Moncrief are highly similar, or similar enough.
And that is inaccurate.
No, like Will Fuller is a low-end wide receiver one when he's healthy. And that might be an aggressive statement, but in terms of what he was doing, what he's done in his healthy games with Deshaun Watson – has been something that is very close to DeAndre Hopkins, not in terms of how they get their points, but their total number of fantasy points is actually pretty similar. So if that full offense is healthy, Hopkins will lose targets to Fuller, especially to QT, who is just kind of like a target magnet, very efficient in the slot. And then like Duke Johnson too, as someone who can siphon off enough targets to where there's no need to give the sheer volume to Hopkins when you have this arsenal. So
should we infuriate the people real quick?
Sure.
Every season of DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller's career together, Will Fuller has averaged more yards per target than DeAndre Hopkins has every year. That includes the Brock Osweiler seasons. And people probably think, oh, well, Fuller hasn't played a ton of games. Will Fuller's played in 31 games, which is more than most people would expect, including 92 targets as a rookie with Brock Osweiler, and he still averages more yards per target than Hopkins.
Yeah. I mean, and targets aren't everything. I would probably want to adjust that to more of like yards per route run, but still, like, there are metrics you can look at to identify Will Fuller as a very explosive number two who, like, on most teams would be a number one.
Yeah. No, Will Fuller is, you know, I've written a bunch of these, like, you know, how to win your league articles or whatever on Roto Experts. And Will Fuller is one guy to me that seems like if you're just picking in between the sixth and the eighth round and you're looking for a dude who's, you know, 75th percentile outcome is on a bunch of championship teams, Will Fuller would be one of those guys for me.
Yeah, he is the classic, like, Rotovizian old school risk seeking pick where if he hits, you win your league based on his ADP right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so next thing I want to do, there are a handful of running backs right now. They're about in between five and eight guys who have moved up five or more spots in average draft position over the last 10 days in like the Draft Best Ball Championship, who I think are great zero RB targets, and I kind of just want to get your take on some of these guys. First is Tony Pollard, who has a last 10 days ADP of 148, but I think you and I both know from doing drafts right now, he actually goes way higher than that.
Yeah. Pollard is someone who really intrigued me in the early days of the like draft process of like looking at these guys as college prospects and thinking about what they might do in the NFL because he was so explosive. He didn't run a great 40 time at the combine, but it was a 4.52, which for his size was still like sufficient.
It's fine. Yeah.
But he was injured. He had a hamstring pull. At his pro day, he ran like a 4.38. Which, you know, adjust that a little bit, but like at that
That's
point,
interesting. Basically, I did not know that.
Yeah. So at that point, he's basically like a bigger Justice Hill. So like the explosiveness that people are talking about out of like Justice Hill, that's what Tony Pollard has. Like he might be the most explosive back like for straight line speed in this class when you're adjusting for size. So he's really intriguing to me, especially because he has that versatility of producing as a kick returner in college. So a lot to like about him. And at 210 pounds, like he's not a change of pace guy. Like he could be the lead back. He never saw that workload in college, but I think he has that capabilities. And I kind of hate to go to this place, but the Cowboys have actually been really good over the past 20 years, whatever number of years you want to put on it, at scouting running backs. Like
they name me a time that Dallas didn't have good running backs. Like you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not even just talking about the starter. I'm talking about like they find dudes in the third, fourth round who go on to be like good NFL running backs on other teams.
Yeah, like even like Tashard Choice as like one of the worst guys in that era, like he had some production. Like they actually have been really good organizationally at scouting running backs, even those guys in the middle rounds, like Marion Barber. And that's like
DeMarco Murray was a third round pick.
Yeah. So Pollard has potential. But I do think that this stuff with Zeke gets worked out and that Pollard ends up spending most of the time this year on the bench. So yeah. Like, but within the range of outcomes,
do you buy this stuff that he, like, I actually kind of do that. I think over the last 2 to 3 years, the organization has been searching for their version of like a Chris Thompson type player or a Giovanni Bernard type player who can play like a little bit of slot, a little bit of pass catching back, maybe on the field the same time as the primary running back. Cause I do kind of buy that for Pollard.
No, I mean, I think that's true. I think that's what they would have wanted, like ideally for Tavon Austin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the thing is there's a difference between saying you want a player like that and then actually giving him the snaps. And once Zeke comes back, I think they're just going to use Zeke.
Yeah. I am mega bullish on Kellen Moore. Like big.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to know what to expect out of him because like, yeah. So he could be fantastic, especially like I like that he's a coach's son. I like that in college he played in a pretty innovative,
creative offense. Yeah.
So there is some hope, but I do want to have some sort of skepticism of like Maybe he won't be the best play caller ever, you know, but he probably has to be better than what the, or at least just as good as what the Cowboys have seen.
No, I'll just go ahead and say right now, he's going to be better than Linehan was, because Linehan was legit bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good. Even if he's bad, I think it's a good sign for the organization that they are at least thinking outside of the box. Like, they didn't go with just some, like, has-been.
So next is I think next is officially the most Sean Siegel player in at least the last 3 years, Darwin Thompson.
I love Darwin Thompson.
Yeah, same. I love him and Damien Williams. I try and leave every draft with one of the two of them.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say are the chances of Darwin Thompson by the end of the year being the starting running back?
I mean, I think if Damien Williams gets hurt, I think he is likely to be the guy. I think the odds of him sending Damien Williams to the bench are pretty low, but also, like, I consider, like, Carlos Hyde is going to be cut. So I'm not stressed about him at all.
Yeah. I think there's a pretty decent chance that, it ends up being Thompson by the end of the year. Cause I think one way or another, Damien Williams, whether it's injury or he just doesn't play quite as well, I think Darwin will get a real shot at some point. So he's someone I'm really bullish on.
There are definitely some of these vibes that, like, the Chiefs wanted it to be Damien, and for whatever reason, like, the pieces just are not quite fitting. Like I don't have a specific data point to say that. I just say I'm still drafting Damien. I still like him as a player. I think, you know, Chiefs 60% of snaps running back is an insanely valuable player, but I do just kind of get some weird vibes, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to try to kind of insulate myself to what I want to think. So I want to be really bullish on Darwin Thompson. At the same time, I do want to, like, remind myself he's a sixth-round pick.
He's a sixth-round pick from Utah State who weighs 190 pounds.
Yeah. So I, like, part of me is like, oh, Darwin Thompson, he definitely should get a shot. And then the other part of me is like, yeah, this is a small school sixth rounder. I should probably just ignore this guy because in a year he won't be in the league.
Right. Kalen Ballage, where do you stand on the Ballage Drake Holy Wars?
Oh man. He's moving up my rankings. I mean, that's an obvious statement. He's moving up everyone's rankings, but I think Drake is the better, like, inherent player, but I do like the big things about Ballage, which, like, okay, he's big, he's a pass catcher, and he has good straight line speed. Like, that's basically, it's like, oh, I'm just
right.
David Johnson. You know, like, I'm just, like, that basic prototype is something that works in the NFL. So even if he's not all that good of a runner and running is his weakness, I still think he could be a good running back.
I'd rather have a guy be weaker at running on a losing team than weaker at pass catching.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big questions with them is just, like, what do we expect out of the Dolphins? Like, I have no idea.
I expect them to be bad. I expect them to lose a lot. But, you know, if Ballage is getting first crack of the goal line work, and if, like, I mean, this Kenyon Drake thing in Miami has been so star-crossed. It's like, and now he's hurt. Like, you know, just, I guess I was drafting Ballage a lot when he was going in between the 120s and the 150s. Now that he costs you a top 100 pick, I am less interested in investing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I wouldn't be touching him there.
Like, for example, a guy I will take over him 10 out of 10 times now is Matt Breida. I take Breida over him when given the choice. Breida, so my three, like, big zero RB guys right now that I try and leave most of my drafts in the Draft Best Ball Championship with are one of Pollard or Thompson, but likely not both, Justice Hill and Matt Breida.
Yeah, I love Hill, love Breida, because Breida is going to get his work anyway. And there is the chance that he actually does overtake Tevin Coleman as the lead back. Like, I think there's a decent chance that happens. And McKinnon is basically sunk at this point.
Yeah, you know, I would say if they set the line at 0.5 snaps this year for McKinnon, I don't know which one.
Yeah, I mean, I would take the over, but I think he's going to be, you know, like it, I think he's going to be IR'd, right? He can't be put on the PUP because he practiced once. So it's either IR or cut or whatever it is. But
I mean, yeah, but they can do IR designated for return.
Right, designated for return, which means he won't be playing until like the second half of the season. And like at that point, I think the roles would be pretty solid. So yeah, Breida is the main guy out of all of the running backs you've mentioned that I'm the most bullish on. Like, also, I think he could be a top 12 back.
I do too, because so there are a couple things. One, we have negative bias with San Francisco because they sucked last year, but they sucked last year with CJ Beathard and Nick Mullins, and everyone was hurt and yada yada. And I think they're going to be better on offense this year with Jimmy G. I think they'll be better with the addition of these like more explosive wide receivers. You know, they're no longer giving snaps to Pierre Garçon. And also there's this weird thing where Matt Breida was healthy throughout all of college. He was healthy throughout all of his rookie year, you know, played in all these games. And then I don't know if I've ever seen someone run as bad as Matt Breida did last year. And then he still played through all those injuries he had last year. Like, I don't know why people think he's so fragile. I guess just because it just happened.
Yeah. The fact that he was as productive as he was while being as injured as he was is pretty incredible. And I mean, he had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage last year. Like, I don't think people are remembering that.
No, they don't. They remember. So a couple of things that people remember is they remember the Chiefs game where it looked like he tore his ACL and then he came back in the game. Like that, like that's something that, cause that was like a big game that had a lot of points. And I don't know, like, people just associate weird things with running backs. They just they associate these very visceral moments, and they also, people remember bidding on Alfred Morris in the preseason too.
Yeah, no, Breida. I don't understand why he's as low as he is.
Yeah, so that's another guy that that we really like, and then two other guys who actually go super late. You know, you can get these with your 16, 17, 18 rounds picks. C.J. Anderson and Malcolm Brown. I think those two guys like really define zero running back because they are absolutely free and could basically be starting running backs in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, CJ Anderson is the one that I'm much more interested in. I get the Malcolm Brown stuff, but I still think that even in a scenario where Brown is seeing a lot of touches, so let's say Todd Gurley is injured, whatever it is, I still think Daryl Henderson will be productive enough to kind of take away some of the upside that you want in Malcolm Brown. But CJ Anderson, like, he could actually end up being the lead back. There's a chance that happens. He's one injury away from it. And even if that doesn't happen, he could be getting the goal line touches anyway.
I think his, and not only that, they in this preseason game they just had, they were taking carry on off on third downs for CJ Anderson. Isn't that crazy?
That does seem crazy, but I mean, it's possible that CJ Anderson is the better blocking back in that situation.
I would say that's just, if you wanted to point to me two coaches who were going to look at a young running back who's explosive and then look at an old guy who was just on a playoff team and go, you know what, we'd rather have the old guy in there to protect Matt Stafford, it's going to be Daryl Bevel and Matt Patricia with his go fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Daryl Bevel is the one back there calling plays, I think is something actually to really highlight the potential CJ Anderson has, because that team is going to be relatively run heavy anyway. Even if they aren't as run heavy as we might imagine because of game script or whatever, in the overall context of the league, they're still going to be relatively run heavy. So CJ Anderson, I think he's going way too late in a lot of drafts.
Okay, so I would like, because I just love to ask everyone about Justice Hill, give me your Justice Hill stance and position.
I like him a lot. They're going to be very run heavy, they being the Ravens. I think he's probably being drafted where he should be, but he has massive upside in the event of a Mark Ingram injury or just recession. Justice Hill. If Ingram fails, I think Hill will be the number one runner. I don't think it's going to be a change of pace thing for him. I think he will elevate to being the number one runner. And at that point, he has top 12 upside.
Yeah, and because I think Gus Edwards is like very much is what he is, right? And I think the Ravens know that Gus Edwards is just, you know, they're not going to change him. They're not going to add anything to his game. He just is what it is. And Justice Hill has the ability to, you know, it like, you know, be a difference maker, I suppose.
Yeah, if they were satisfied with Gus Edwards, Mark Ingram and Justice Hill wouldn't be on the team.
There you go. Very good point. One last guy. And it feels so weird. Deion Lewis is a guy who's coming off back-to-back seasons of over 215 touches. The running back starting ahead of him has a lower body injury and just returned to practice. And he goes in the 13th, 14th round. So we saw Matt Breida slide up. We've seen Darwin Thompson slide up. We've seen Ty Montgomery slide up. All these running backs who have, you know, slight positive changes in value have been going up draft boards for the last month. And Deion Lewis has stayed stationary.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers, he has, over the last 2 years, around 1,000 yards from scrimmage each year, and he's a guy who can actually play as a receiving back. So you say that, and that sounds like a good thing. It's just a question of his offense. Like, it could be really bad.
The offense is going to be gross.
Yeah, and he doesn't get the goal line touches. So, I understand why there's not much enthusiasm around him, but he's going too late in drafts.
It's just like, I want to be short Derrick Henry every which way, you know, like I don't want to have Derrick. There has been a couple times where I've been doing these draft best balls and he's gotten to like the fifth round. And I'm like, I just don't want to click on his name. Like, yeah. Have you ran Derrick Henry through like the RotoViz screener or anything?
No. What's coming up with him?
So I just still do the very OG Sean Siegel PFR screener. Uh-huh. So if you just run guys with over 500 carries in their career and less than 50 targets, it's like it's Ron Dane, Stephen Ridley, and Beaton Wells and Derrick Henry. So yeah. it's literally for real, all guys who after their age 24 seasons were never fantasy relevant again. Like they all fell off for various reasons.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair, but I don't know. Henry's, I think, in a different class, just like as an athlete, than those other guys. And I mean, but like you can still project him for a significant number of touches moving forward. The only question is, does he get injured or not?
Yeah. Like I think there is a decent, like, I guess if you were going to ask me who has the better ceiling season between Derrick Henry or Leonard Fournette, it's probably Henry, actually, just because Henry's like a real legit good, like a good athlete.
Yeah. So Derrick Henry, like, where would you set the line of total rushing yards for him this year?
Where would I set? I mean, I guess let me look at my projection. My guess is that with 16 healthy games, it's actually probably pretty good.
Yeah, let's assume he doesn't play 16 healthy games.
I would assume 950 rushing yards.
Okay, I think that's low. I think that's actually pretty low.
So 16 games, I have him with 266 carries and right over 1,100 yards.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too aggressive on him. I have him for, and this is for 14.8 games, I have him projected for just under 250 rushing yards. Sorry, 250 rushing attempts.
I have them as like basically like a very inefficient offense overall, though. So that's limiting the number of rush attempts. That's limiting the number of rushing yards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm looking at this now. Like, I'm looking at the Action Network cheat sheet where I have like my rankings that are based on projections and Chris Raybon on Sean Corner. They also have theirs in there. I have Henry as the running back 17, and they both have him as the running back 20. So we're in the same range there. So like, I feel
running,
like I'm
running
not
back really 20 off. Running back 20 is where our projections have him.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not all that off on him. I'm just a little bit slightly higher. But I've always been slightly a Derrick Henry truther. That might be even sort of downplaying it. Like, I think he's going to get significant opportunities. It's just a question of, like, whether he stays healthy. But I even then, I still don't think he's going to be all that much of a receiving option.
No, I have him for, like, 16 targets.
Yeah, I have him for 21 targets, 16 receptions. I mean, we're so close. Either way, that's not someone who's going to be tearing it up as a receiver.
Exactly. Okay, last guy I want to ask you about, because this is a guy who I didn't like as a prospect, but now I like for fantasy, Josh Jacobs. I am a Josh Jacobs bull for just not for dynasty or anything, but definitely for 2019. I am a Josh Jacobs bull.
I think I am probably even more of a Josh Jacobs bull than you are. And I hate to say that.
It's so clear why, though.
Yeah, he's going to get a ton of usage. And actually, for Dynasty, I'm still on board. I still think he's the number one pick in Dynasty. Do you have N'Keal Harry as the higher Dynasty
pick? No. I think this was just a really bad rookie class, though.
Yeah.
Like, N'Keal Harry was my number one wide receiver, but he wasn't a number one wide receiver like previous number one wide receivers in their class were. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay, so let me give you a list of over the past two decades. There have been 11 guys other than Josh Jacobs who have entered the league as first rounders who are 21 years old as rookies and who are like big bodied guys, like guys who are 220 pounds.
Yeah.
You have Saquon, Zeke, Todd Gurley, Beanie Wells, Jonathan Stewart, Marshawn Lynch, Lawrence Maroney, Steven Jackson, TJ Duckett, Jamal Lewis, Edgerrin James. Now, like there's some sort of duds on that list, but all of those guys had multiple seasons of fantasy utility. And like, I don't like that Josh Jacobs isn't all that athletic. I don't like that he wasn't all that productive, like in a volume way at Alabama, but he was efficient. He's a big guy. He's a first rounder and he's 21. Like those are the big things. So he's going to get a ton of usage. I have him as a top 12 back this year.
Yeah, no, same. I have him. So I think I have him as my running back 11, I want to say.
That's RB. I'm right there. I have him as my RB 11.
Like, and he goes in the fourth round. He does. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, he's the guy that I think if you are going with like a sort of modified zero RB approach you're going wide receiver, tight end or whatever it is, like you're grabbing Jacobs in the fourth round. Like he could be the number one back on your team, even though you're not getting him till later.
And I think the Raiders, like if this whole Antonio Brown saga plays itself out, I actually think the Raiders are going to be fine on offense. They have Antonio Brown. They have Tyrell Williams. They have J.J. Nelson as like the field stretcher. They have Darren Waller, who's this like hyper athletic guy. They have a good pass catching back behind Josh Jacobs. And the numbers say that Derek Carr, as long as he has a clean pocket, like he's actually fine. So I don't know. I kind of think there's like sort of like an anti-Raiders bias, but I don't expect them to be bad on offense.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be that bad. I think they will be around league average, which is good enough. And like I have to say, as much as like I think Antonio Brown is a really risky pick just because you don't know what's going to happen with him, in the median range of outcomes, I still have him as like wide receiver 8. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that is I think I have him a little bit lower than that, but certainly it's like, you know, I'm not going to argue with someone ranking Antonio Brown, the number one wide receiver by far over the last five seasons, highly.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that like, I wouldn't rank him there. I wouldn't draft him there, but like in projections, that's where I have him. But right, I mean, he exactly. Obviously carries huge downside risk, which means I'm not touching him.
Yeah. All right. Well, Matt, a great talk on all the important and relevant fantasy football discussions of our day. Tell people about what you have going on over at the Action Network.
Yeah. So at Action Network, I just updated all of my projections in the fantasy draft cheat sheet that we have. Going to be updating rankings, which are based on the projections, but as I mentioned, kind of different because you look at different things in projections versus rankings, thinking about upside, thinking about downside. So going to be updating rankings shortly. And might have some articles coming out looking at a few players that I'm kind of taking a stand on one way or another. But we just have a lot of draft content coming out each day at Action Network. So be sure to check that out. And then, of course, we have the preseason, daily breakdowns for the slates for people who are degenerate enough to be playing those, which I think it's actually a lot of fun to be playing preseason football. So check that out at Fantasy Labs.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be friends with the type of people who don't want to play preseason NFL DFS.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, everyone, make sure to check us out over on rotoexperts.com. You can get 10% off the NFL 365 package using the promo code MATTEK. We will be back tomorrow.